We want to take this opportunity again to welcome those who are visiting in our audience. I want you to know we're happy that you're here. We hope that you will give kind attention to the things that we will present this morning. And we hope that we can say them in such a way that you can be understanding of what God's will is in this matter. And if you again have any questions, and this is especially true of this lesson that I'll be talking about today, that you would want to engage in a conversation about the things that I'll present, I'll be more than happy to do that. I'll give great consideration to the things that I'm going to say in these lessons today, and something that's been on my mind and something that we need to talk about because of the country and the nation that we're a part of. I also want to, one thing I forgot to tell Brother Pinkston in the announcements, there is a special announcement on the bulletin board as you go out that pertains to the family here and to the Christians here. Be sure that you look at that as you go out the building this morning. It's about next Lord's Day evening, so please take a look at that on your way out. There is no doubting, without reservation, that we live in the greatest nation upon the earth. That's not brag, that's just fact. We have been very greatly blessed being an American, living in a country where we can worship in this capacity with no fear of being arrested or molested or being driven out of our building or being able not to assemble in this capacity to worship the one true and living God in the way that He has told us to do. And we are a very prosperous nation. We have great prosperity even in these difficult economic times, ladies and gentlemen. We are much better off than a large, large percentage of the world. Indeed, we have many blessings that we are to be eternally thankful for. But brethren, that doesn't mean that this is a perfect country, because it's not. There's things in this country that greatly alarm me, give me cause to worry about the future, and give me a cause to worry about how God looks at this nation. Our presidents end every speech and political speech that's made in this political season with the same phrase, and God bless America. I certainly hope someday He'll be able to do that again. But I don't believe in this particular time in our existence that that can be something that can be readily affirmed, that God blesses this country. Every political season, which we are involved in now until November next year, in the coming months, we're going to be bombarded with political announcements, with TV ads, with debates, with campaign promises, you name it, we're going to hear it. And whenever this season comes along, there are issues that always rise to take center stage. This year is probably going to be the economic situation. And that's probably going to take center stage in our political discussion this year. But there's another issue that always raises its head, and it has become a political issue. But I'm here to tell you this morning, it is no political issue. It is a moral issue. And I want to talk this morning about the fact of abortion. Abortion is nothing more than legal murder. It is nothing more than a stain that is on our nation. Our nation is stained with blood because of our attitude and our conduct and our arrogance and how we treat the unborn in this country. The politicians have made it a political issue. I want to tell you, a long time ago, God made it a moral issue. And that has not changed. It is a moral issue, and it's one that we need to deal with. And it's one that I want to tell you this morning that should be something that should be important to every one of us. I want you to take your Bibles out and turn to Psalms chapter 106. And you know, people think the Bible says nothing about this. I want to tell you the Bible has a lot to say about this, and all that it says we need to adhere to and we need to believe. In Psalms chapter 106 and verse 38, here is what the psalmist said. And shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and of their daughters, whom they sacrificed to idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. God's children were charged with this type of conduct. They have polluted the lamb with blood. How did they do that? They were worshiping the god Molech. And Molech was a god of fire. And then to offer sacrifice to this god, they would pass their children through the fire. They would actually offer their children as a sacrifice to this God. God said that that was polluting the land with blood. Why? Because it was innocent blood. Ladies and gentlemen, it is no different in our nation. Our land is polluted with blood. We have blood on our hands because we are taking the life of innocent blood. Now you can slice it, you can dice it, you can call it anything you want. God calls it murder. It's not a matter of choice. It's not pro-life. It's not pro-choice. It's a life. It's a living human thing. How did all this get started? How did we go down this path in this country? It began in 1973. In 1973, in January 22nd, 1973, Roe v. Wade became a Supreme Court decision. The alias Jane Roe was used for Norman McCovey, on whose behalf the suit was originally filed, alleging that the abortion law in Texas violated her constitutional rights and the rights of other women. And the defendant was the District Attorney of Dallas County, Texas, Henry B. Wade. The book that you see on the screen is called I Was Wrong. And it was written by two women who went in different directions on this subject. At first, Norma found Christ, and now she is an active pro-life defender. The one that this suit was even brought about because of her belief that she had a constitutional right to terminate her pregnancy, if that was her decision. When she found Christ, she found the truth. And now she opposes the very thing that she sued the Supreme Court that made this decision. And Roe versus Wade became the court's decision on January 2nd, 1973. The court's decision in this case was that the Ninth Amendment, in stating that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall be constructed to deny or disparage others retained by people, protected a person's right to privacy. In other words, it was determined that she had the right to determine to end her pregnancy if that was her decision, if that was what she wanted to do. Now, the abortion and the law. Here's what the law says. The Supreme Court ruled that a woman in a consultation with her physician and free from government interference has a constitution-protected right to have an abortion in the early stages of pregnancy, that is, before viability. The key in this ruling is this word right here, viability. Before there is a viability. What exactly does that mean? Well, in 1992, in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the court reaffirmed the right to an abortion. However, by giving states the right to enact restrictions that do not create undue burdens on women seeking abortions, the ruling significantly weakened the legal protection previously afforded women and their physicians. In 1992, this law weakened a little bit the ability of women to get abortions. It also opened the door to states to begin to make their own laws that they could enforce. And thus, that's exactly what happened. Currently, at this present time, in 2011, there are 35 states that enforce parental consent or notification of laws for minors seeking abortion. But that means there are 15 states that there is no parental consent, that your daughter, your granddaughter, could go and have an abortion and you would have nothing to say about it. You would not have to be consulted and they could do it and the authorities of that state would not have to let you know that they are getting an abortion. That's true in 15 states. Congress has barred the use of federal Medicaid funds to pay for abortions, except when the woman's life would be endangered by full-term pregnancy or in cases of rape or incest. 17 states use public funds to pay for abortions. for some poor women, but only for do so voluntarily. The rest do so under the order. About 13% of all of the abortions in the United States are paid with public funds. Virtually all are paid by state governments. Now, that shocked me. That was something that really got my attention. That virtually every abortion that's taking place in our country is usually paid by state-funded government programs. Now, the abortion and the law. 20 states have laws that could be used to restrict the legal status of abortion, and most of those 20 states enforce them. 4 states have laws that automatically ban abortion if Roe were to be overturned. 13 states retain the unenforced pre-Roe abortion bans. That means in 13 states, it's illegal. You can't do it. 7 states have laws that express their intent to restrict the right to legal abortion to the maximum extent permitted by the U.S. Supreme Court in the absence of Roe v. Wade. Our current president, President Barack Obama, has made it one of his campaign promises during the 2008 election that he wants to make Roe v. Wade a permanent amendment to the Constitution. Now, you listen to what I just said. He wants to make it a permanent amendment to the Constitution. That means it would legalize abortion under any condition at any point of the pregnancy. Do you know there are states that you can terminate an abortion at 8 months? Now, you let that sink in. 8 months. You know, children can be born early. I know of a child in Indiana that's trying to be adopted by a friend of mine's son that was born at 5 months and survived. Let that sink in. Now, abortion is one of the most commonly medically performed procedures in the United States. Let this think in your mind. Every year since it's Roe versus Wade, approximately 1.3 million abortions are performed in the United States alone. 1.3 million. I am proud to say that I live in a state that has one of the lowest abortion rates in the country. 7 out of 1,000. You can look at the numbers of the other states. 31 out in California, 31 in Nevada. Those are the highest states. And Florida is right behind them at 30. And so every state has blood on their hands. How many abortions have taken place since Roe versus Wade? 50,709,089. Now, you know the number of abortions per year, that figures out to be 1.37 million numbers of abortion per year. That means, ladies and gentlemen, every day, 3,700 babies are aborted. 3,700 a day. Now, you know how much that is? That's more than the combined population of all of these states. You take all these states and you combine their population, and that is more than is in all those states put together that have been put to death since Roe versus Wade. 1.86 million. Now look at this. This is interesting to me. I pulled this off the internet. You know the internet. If you love statistics, the internet's a great place. You get all statistics for everything. The number of abortions per year, 1.37, 3,700 a day. Now notice, heart disease, 631,000. Cancer, 559,000. Stroke, 137. Chronic lower respiratory, 124,000. Diabetes, 72. Accidents, about 122,000. Alzheimer's, 72,000. Emphysema and ammonia, 56. I'm not even going to try to pronounce these names. Drew probably knows them pretty well. 45,344. 3,000, and this is the source for data for 2006. You add all of those up, and that's 1.86 million people that died by all these diseases. We put 1.37 million to death by abortion. Don't tell me that this is not a problem. Don't tell me that this is not a plague in our nation. You know, we have the highest abortion rate in the world. In the world. We are number one. We put more babies to death in our country than any other nation on this earth. Even Africa. To date, right now, 2011, you know how many people have been killed in wars in our country? 1,314,000 Americans have died while answering the call of duty. And here's a list of all of the totals of every war. We kill more babies in a year than we have lost in every war this country has ever fought. In 1 year. Brethren, that's mind-boggling. How in the world did we get here? How in the world did a nation that was founded upon Christian freedom, that was founded upon godly principles, how in the world did we reach the point that we are? Adolf Hitler, who murdered 6 million people, and we call him mad, evil, and sick. And he only killed 6 million. We did that in 6 years or less. Think about it. Abortion rates. Latin America, 31. Caribbean, 37. That's together. You go all the way down. North America, 21 and 22. And the reason I say we're number one is by our population. By our population, we rank, if you take our population, because some of these countries have more people, but by our population, numerically, we rank the first. Now, this is a graph. Approximately 42 million per year happen all over the world. Approximately 115,000 per day. Per day throughout the whole world. And 3,700 of them are ours. 3,700 of them are ours. Here's a graph from 2009. With respect to abortion issue, would you consider yourself pro-choice or pro-life? You can see on the graph, in 2009, we're coming down. Pro-life is coming down. Now, combined position of legality of legal under any circumstance, 28%. Legal under most circumstances, 13%. 40% legal in only a few circumstances, and illegal in all circumstances, which would be us, is 17%. This year, it's risen a little bit. It's 23% that think it should be illegal in any situation. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's the statistics. How's it done? How's it done? Well, suction aspiration. Let me give you the hard facts of how it's done. This is the most common abortion method during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. The mother receives a general or local anesthetic. Her cervix is quickly dilated, a suction curic hollow tube with a long edge tip knife is inserted into the womb. This instrument is connected to a vacuum machine by a transparent tube. The vacuum suction is 29 times more powerful than a household vacuum cleaner, tears the fetus and the placenta into small pieces, which are sucked through the tube and into a bottle and discarded. Dilation of Keurig D&C. This method is similar to the suction method with the added insertion of a hook-shaped knife, which is called a Keurig, which cuts the baby into pieces. These pieces are scraped out through the crevice and discarded. Note, the abortion method should not be confused with the therapeutic D&C done for reasons other than for pregnancy. Dilation and activation, D&E it's called. This method is used up to 18 weeks. Instead of a loop-shaped knife used in D&C abortions, a pair of forceps is inserted into the womb to grasp part of the fetus. The teeth of the forceps twist and tear the bones of the unborn child. The process is repeated until the fetus is totally dismembered and removed. Usually the spine must be snapped and the skull must be crushed in order to remove them. I had trouble reading these the first time. Salt poisoning, saline ejection, used after 16 weeks. When enough fluid is accumulated, a long needle injects into a strong salt solution through the mother's abdomen into the baby's sac. The baby swallows this fluid and is poisoned by it. It also acts as a cohesive, burning off the outer layer of skin. It normally takes someone over an hour for the baby to die from this. Within 24 hours, the labor pains begin. It usually sets in and the mother will give birth to a dead or dying baby. There have been many cases, and I want to underline this because I know a nurse and I've talked to one a few years ago. There was a nurse that stood up in a congressional hearing, and her job was to take the babies that had been aborted, that had not died, and she used to take them off the table and go in a room, and she would rock them until they died. And she made, as she said, she did that hundreds and hundreds of times. And she told that to Congress. Didn't sway their mind at all. And I want you to know that a few have survived this procedure and were later adopted. The next one, chemical abortion. This form of abortion uses chemicals developed by the Upjohn Pharmaceutical Company. If you own a stock in that, sell it. These chemicals cause uterus to contract intensely, pushing out the developing baby. The contractions are more violent than normal, natural contractions, so the unborn baby is frequently killed by the contractions. Some have even been decapitated. Many, however, also have been born alive and die, and are left to die. Hysterectomy or cesarean section. Used mainly in the last 3 months of pregnancy. The womb is entered by surgery through the wall of the abdomen. The technique is similar to cesarean delivery, except that the umbilical cord is usually cut while the baby is still in the womb, thus cutting off his oxygen supply, causing him to suffocate. Sometimes the baby is removed alive and simply left in a corner to die, from neglect to exposure and neglect. Five steps are used to a partial birth abortion. Guided by ultrasound, the abortionist grabs the baby's legs and forceps. The baby's leg is pulled out of the birth canal. The abortionist delivers the baby's entire body except for the head. The abortionist jams scissors into the baby's skull. The scissors are then opened and enlarged to the skull. The scissors are removed and a suction catheter is inserted and the child's brains are sucked out, causing the collapse of the skull and the baby to die. And we want to argue about the inhumane way that we put people to death in our country. We put people on a gurney, give them drugs to dull their senses, put needles in their arms and let them go to sleep and they die. And that said, and we have people who are on file and we have people that protest that that's an inhumane way to die. There's not one of these methods that is human. It's inhuman. And we make it a political issue. Pro-life and pro-choice. Who talks for the child? Who gets to voice for the child? Is a child's voice no more important than the mother's voice? What about the father? This can't be done alone. What about the father that caused the pregnancy in the first place? Do you realize that the majority of abortions that are done in our country are done because the people don't want to be bothered with the child? Is it the time to think about that before you commit fornication? Should you think about that possibility? Young ladies, don't you let any man, and men, don't you ever talk a woman into doing something that could result in the birth of a child and then think the easy way out is to abort that child. That's sin on top of sin. Let me tell you what happened a few years ago in Indiana. They were going to redo their curriculum. You know, we decided in 1980 that we needed to teach our children safe sex. And we started teaching sex education in school. Well, how are we doing about that? It's 30 years later. How are we doing with that? Today, the abortion rate are higher than they've ever been. Today, unwed mothers and pregnancies outside of marriage are at an all-time high. We're doing pretty well, aren't we? But in Indiana, there's a preacher that preaches at the Lafayette Heights Church of Christ. His name is John Smith. John was very interested in this new curriculum that they were going to put into play in the school system. And so he went to the PTA meetings when they were discussing how this material was going to be put together. He stood up at one of the meetings and it was full of people. He said there was about 300 people there. And he stood up and said he insisted that one of the chapters in the class had to deal with the subject of abstinence, of refraining from sexual activity. He was laughed to scorn. They laughed him down. One lady stood up and said, "You need to get with the 21st century." Brethren, what's happened to us? What has happened to our thinking? How in the world, if you know the facts of abortion, could it ever be an issue that you'd have to think about? That's exactly why I didn't vote for Barack Obama. That's why I didn't vote for Bill Clinton. It had nothing to do with them being a Democrat or Republican. They are on record of wanting to make this a legal procedure for all time by making an amendment. I want this thing scourged because it's a scourge on our society. And brethren, I don't care how you want to call it, it is murder, plain and simple. It's legal murder. What's the definition of murder? The willful taking of a life. Does abortion qualify? Isn't that the willful taking of a life? And it's just a paradox to me that we sit and we debate the inhumane treatment of criminals and of people who have been sentenced to death, and yet we don't bat an eye to any of these methods that are used to abort a child. And I'll tell you how we've numbed our society to it. We changed terminology. It's not a child. It's a fetus. It's a child. It's a life. It's a human being. You know where the most dangerous place to live today is? In the womb. In the womb. Who's having them? 15 to 19? 19%. 20 to 24? 32%. 25 to 29, 22%. Over 40, only 2%. And these numbers are from 1995. I would suspect that they would even be higher today. What about according to race? Caucasians lead with 57.8. 33.9 are black, 5.3 are others, and there are 2.9 that are unknown. And you know what? Why we lead, the Caucasian race leads? Because it costs money to get an abortion. Costs money. Now, what about who's having them according to marriage status? Never married, 64%. Married, 18%. Divorced, 9.4%. Religious affiliations, Protestants, this amazes me. How you could even claim to be religious and get an abortion is amazing to me. The 37.4 are Protestants. That means that's people like that are considered Christians. 37% of the people that get abortions in our country claim to be Christians. Amazing. Catholics, 31.3. Jewish, 1.3. None, 27.7. And evangelical, 18%. What about income? 28.7 have less than 15,000. But notice, 38% are in the realm of $30,000 to $60,000 a year in their income. That kind of got my attention. I want you to look at this last statement here. The reasons. Health risk, 6%. 6% of all abortions are for health risk. And every time I hear this debate, they want to bring up the person with rape and incest. 1%. And that has never changed. That has been true since they kept statistics. 1% of all abortions are for the case of rape or incest. And only 5% more are for health risk. The other 93% are social reasons. What's that mean, social? It means they don't want to be inconvenienced. It means it's an aversion to their life. It causes them to do something they don't want to do. Who's having them? 81% follow fornication. You think premarital sex is not a trouble in our country? Having a baby could change your life. I guarantee you it'll change your life. 16%. Can't afford a baby now. When's the time that you should figure that out? You're right, Jack. It's funny. When should you think about that? You should think of that before you engage in the action that leads to that result. Relationship problems, single parenthood, 12%. Not ready for responsibility, 21%. To keep sexual activity a secret. I can't believe somebody would put that on the thing, but that 1% did. Not mature enough, that should be way up there. It's only 11%, but it should be way up there. Doesn't want more children, 8%. Husband or partner wants it, 1%. I find that interesting. Husband or partner, 1%. Do you also know in abortion that the father never has to be notified? I didn't know that. A woman could do it and never tell the father of the child. Fetus has possible health problems, 3%. Woman has health problems, 3%. Parents want it, 1%. A parent would want it? A parent would tell their child to abort a child? Victim of rape, 1%. Others are 3%. What does all these statistics tell us? I'll tell you what all these statistics tell us, ladies and gentlemen, that most of the abortions that happen in our country are because they are for inconvenience to the person who becomes pregnant with a child. And they don't want a child. They don't want to be bothered. They don't want to raise that child. They don't want to be bothered. And the quickest solution is just to abort it. And our country gives them the means of getting it done. How many of you heard about the abortion pill? They have it in France. It's been introduced in our country. Well, that'd be something, wouldn't it? You just take a pill. You just take a pill and it'll kill the child. We'll really make it simple. The brethren, what do we do about it? Well, I'll tell you one thing we don't do about it. Don't go bomb an abortion clinic. Don't go kill an abortion doctor. You don't need to go pitch an abortion clinic. But I'll tell you what you can do. I'll tell you what you can do. Don't sit there and be quiet when the conversation comes up, when people want to talk about pro-life or pro-choice. Open your mouth that God says pro-life and that life of a child, that life has a right to live. And then you better be careful of the people you vote for. Don't put people in office who are pro-choice, who say they want abortion to be a woman's right. I had a discussion with a Christian lady a number of years ago when I preached this lesson in Las Vegas. She came out and she said, I'm never coming back again. I said, well, that's interesting. I'd been there about a year. I said, well, would you tell me why? She goes, nobody, and I mean nobody, is going to tell me what I can do with my body. Well, I'll tell you what, the one that created it can tell you what to do with it. And the one that created it said that life is precious. Matter of fact, let me give you another paradox in our country. What happens if you kill a woman pregnant with a child? You are charged with murder. What? I can abort it, and that's legal, but if I kill it in an accident, that's murder? Tell me that's not a paradox, folks. Story goes, lady went in to see her doctor. She had become pregnant, she was married and became pregnant in an affair. But she wanted to terminate the pregnancy. She's about 4 months along. And she had a 2-year-old little boy. And he brought her in that day. And she was telling the doctor she wanted to get an abortion and wanted to abort the child because she didn't want any more children. And the doctor looked at her and said, well, I'll tell you what. You know, getting an abortion at the point that you are, he says, there's a lot of medical things that can happen, and there's a lot of things that could go wrong. It could be damaging to you. That could be very difficult for you. Why don't you just let me take that child you're with, and I'll take him, and you just go ahead and have this child, and you'll have one, and that's what you wanted, and I'll just take this one that you got. She looked at that doctor and said, are you out of your mind? I'm not going to kill my son. You're about to kill another one. Change your mind. You know what I'd like to see happen? I'd like to see a constitutional amendment that makes every person who has an abortion to have to listen to an ultrasound. That'll take away that it's a fetus. Because that heartbeat tells you it's a human being. Brethren, I am ashamed of my country that lets this scourge continue. Sin is a reproach on any nation. Psalm Proverbs 14, verse 34. Under the old law, if a man killed a woman who was pregnant with a child or hurt her, and she lost the child, that man to be put to death for murder under the law of Moses. in our country, you can be put to death. You can be sentenced to life for taking the life of an unborn child and committing a homicide or in a vehicle accident, and it has been done millions and millions of times in our country. But yet you can walk into a clinic and you can be 3 to 8 months pregnant, and you can tell them you want an abortion, and you can walk out of there and you won't be charged with any kind of a crime. Brethren, there's something wrong with our system. It is broke. Let me ask you another question. How long will it be till we do not pay for our sin? Can we continually thumb our nose at God, thumb our nose at His law without any repercussion? I can't for the life of me look into the eyes of my grandchildren and think about them not being there. And to willfully take a life of a child that cannot speak, that cannot talk, that cannot make an argument for itself. God speaks for that child. And God says, let that child live. Do not put to death a child for the mistake that a person would make. Why make 2 mistakes? Why must a child pay for the mistake of the mother? How is that fair? How is that just? And how is God going to not have a repercussion on this nation? Where does life come from, ladies and gentlemen? It's a gift of God. Turn your Bible to Psalm 139. And we're going to end here this morning. Tonight, I'm going to give you the biblical definition of life. And then you tell me, is it a political issue? For you form my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, and I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works that my soul knows very well. You know, when my children were born, I went and looked at the ultrasounds. You know, when you find out if it's a boy or a girl, unless they give you a hard time and you can't tell, then you got to wait like you used to have to do. But you know, I can look. And as their mother would have the ultrasounds from month to month, I could watch that child as it developed. You know, when I was in Las Vegas, there was a couple there who was expecting their first child. She had a fatal chromosome. And the child died at 4 months. And they had to deliver the child early. And they asked me to come to the hospital. I tell you, it's one of the most toughest things I've ever done. And I was there. They delivered the child and they put it on a table. And the parents asked me to go in there and asked me to pray for them and for that child. And I went in there. And I'll never forget what I saw. Little hands, little feet, 5 fingers on each hand, eyes, a nose, 10 toes, a child, 2 pounds, but a child. And you cannot imagine the pain and the anguish that mother and dad had in losing that child. But in our country, you could go in an abortion clinic and you could just have it done away with and walk out of there in the same day and get on with your life. But you know the sad part of this story? Is no one ever tells those young mothers what happens afterwards. I had a lady sent in my office a number of years ago. I was getting ready for the birth of her first child, so I thought. And she was having a terrible time. She was always crying. She was always upset. Her husband was really worried about her. And he begged me to go talk to her. So I did. And I went to talk to her, and she confessed. And when she was 18 years old, she had become pregnant. And her family encouraged her to get an abortion because they didn't want the embarrassment on the family. So she aborted the baby. But now, being married and getting ready to give birth to a child, she began to understand what she had done when she aborted that baby. And I'm telling you, she never will get over it. They don't tell them that. You've got to deal with the fact when you realize what you've done. When you have a child in your arms and you realize that you put one to death that was just as vital, just as alive, just as full of life, you put that child to death because he was an inconvenience. And then you've got to live with it. But you know the real sadness in this whole story that I'm telling you this morning is that our country, it's now frowned upon. It's not something to be ashamed of. And if you are a pro-life person, there are many people in this country who think that you are unkind and inhuman. Well, you think whatever you want. From the day, as long as God lets me preach, and as long as I live upon this earth, I will speak out against this scourge on our nation. This is a problem that needs to stop. And it needs to be stopped. And we can, and how, what you can do is don't let your voice be heard. Do not be silent. Brethren, this is not a political issue. This is not something that is other people's problems. This is our problem. We live in this country. We're a member of this nation. We are people who are citizens of this country. And like I said, it's a great country. And I love living here and I'm proud to live here. But I'm not going to sweep under the carpet the things that this nation needs to do to clean up its act. And one of the first things, the very first things that we need to do is we need to eliminate the ease of ending a life just because it's an inconvenience for the life of the mother who should have thought of that before she entered the sexual relationship. And so this morning, abortion is legal murder. It is a taking of a life that is precious in the sight of God. And if there is a silver lining in all of this, in any of this, those 50,794,038 abortions that have already taken place, those children are in the arms of Jesus. And I'm forever grateful and thankful for that. But don't let that minimize the evil that this is. And brethren, it's an evil. It's a sin. And it's murder. And our nation has blood on its hands. And nothing can wash it away. Let us be mindful of our responsibility as a member of this country. That we let our voice be known and not be ashamed of what we believe and where we stand. If you're listening and you're not a child of God, I want you to know that God loves you like He loves every life. And He sent His Son to die because He wanted men to live forever. He wanted men to be with Him forever in heaven, and He allowed His Son to come to this earth to live, to die, to give His life, that He might be a remedy for our greatest problem, and that's our sin problem. And by rendering obedience to the gospel, by hearing the word of God, believing it, repenting of our sin, confessing his name before men, we can be washed in the blood and be one of his children. And we can be an heir, and we have the hope of heaven if we'll be faithful and obedient to him until the day that we leave this earth, or until the day that his son returns to judge the world and to redeem the faithful and to judge the world. If we can help you in any way this morning, we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.